Okay, welcome in everybody to episode 3 of the Beast Lore Podcast, a podcast about cryptid creatures, monsters, and the things that may or may not be hiding in the shadows. I'm your host, Jack Daly. Today we are going to be talking about Mothman. I'm going to take a deep dive into the story of Mothman that took over a small West Virginia town in the 1960s, and I'm going to talk about a book called The Mothman Prophecies, written by a man named John Keel, who was there to witness the events. In the end, I think you'll see that the story of Mothman encompasses much more than just the winged creature. But before we get too far into the episode, I want to start you off with a quote from Shakespeare spoken by the character Hamlet. So Hamlet says that there are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. And as someone who lives an esoteric life, this quote resonates with me a lot. I've been kind of tied into sort of the invisible energy that's almost impossible to describe. You know, a lot of people, I think, experience this, but it's hard to put words on it, but you can get kind of tied into this esoteric sort of lifestyle that builds upon itself. And I think that's what really draws me into cryptozoology. And this is tied to just the notion that there are things out there that we don't comprehend. But they're out there, and maybe they're not things that we can really see or tangibly understand, but they're experiences that people are having. And I think that this quote is really emblematic for studying the paranormal, just the notion that there's a lot more going on than meets the eye. You know, we're slaves to the world of the five senses, but reality consists of far more than we can, you know, experience through these senses. And so that's one thing that I want you to be thinking about as you're listening to these episodes, is that, you know, maybe Mothman exists, but he just doesn't exist in a way that we traditionally think of reality, you know, being constructed. And so that's kind of the way that John Keel, the author of this book, looks into Mothman and other paranormal topics that he's researching. And really, I think that too many people cut their minds off to the possibility of these sort of things existing, but, you know, there's a lot more going on, so just keep that in mind. So with that said, let's go ahead and get into the episode about Mothman. And right off the bat, I'm just going to give you a description of what Mothman is. And I think that that's going to be super useful in all of these episodes. I mean, I'm going to kind of treat it like you've never heard of Mothman, you don't know what it is, and I'm just going to give you the descriptions and go over like the main parts of the story that it's involved with. So Mothman is typically described as being a bipedal winged humanoid. So basically, you know, it walks on 2 feet. It is depicted usually with having arms, 2 arms, and kind of a human-like head, and basically the humanoid body, but its distinguishing factor is that it has these giant wings and these piercing red eyes. So this is kind of another example of an anthropomorphic figure showing up in cryptozoology. And the 3 episodes that we've had so far, werewolves, Bigfoot, and Mothman, these are all anthropomorphic creatures, which if you think back and remember, anthropomorphism is basically having human-like features and characteristics. And so I think that there's something really to this in the field of cryptozoology as far as these creatures showing up as anthropomorphic creatures. There's almost probably some kind of projection going on the human's behalf. And I don't really know if that's what that says about their existence in reality or not, but it's a curious thing that these creatures are showing up with anthropomorphic features. Basically, it's usually depicted as having a coloration of black, gray, or dark brown. Typically, it's kind of a bat-like skin that they're said to have. Maybe a little bit of hair, but really, Mothman is more similar to a bat in its form, I think, than a moth. I think that moths usually have sort of like rounded wings, whereas bats kind of have the pointier ones. And there's a statue in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, which was the epicenter of this Mothman story in the 60s, where it's depicted as having these kind of pointed wings, but it also has almost like a reptilian looking head. So that's the main difference. It looks like, I mean, you can look it up, what this statue looks like online. It's pretty shredded. I mean, this Mothman is buff in this statue, and it's got claws on its hands and I think its feet as well, but it has these pointed wings and also this reptilian head with these red eyes. It's said that it's about 7 feet tall and that the wingspan is about 10 to 15 feet. Some reports say that the wings actually cover the span of a road. Oftentimes the sightings with Mothman were actually seen on a road, and that's kind of the point of reference that they have. There's been some reports that say that that Mothman can fly about 100 miles an hour, that it can go well faster than a car going down a highway. So if you think of a normal car on the highway going about 65 miles an hour, there's reports of these Mothmans just shooting right past them. So they can fly really fast. But I think really the distinguishing feature of Mothman is these piercing red eyes that it's said to have. People who have seen Mothman and have seen the eyes, they have said that they experience basically dread and pure evil when they see the eyes. And that's often what's described with a lot of these creatures. With Bigfoot also, you'll hear this feeling of dread that's basically instilled upon the person that's having this experience. And that's the same with Mothman. The eyes are said to be almost hypnotic, like that it can put you in sort of a trance or something like that. And often Mothman is said as having telepathic powers, which that's actually another thing that occurs in the Bigfoot stories, is the mind speak aspect of it. Some of the accounts that are detailed in John Keel's book, the Mothman is basically telepathically communicating with the person that's having this experience. So that's really interesting. But another one of the main aspects of Mothman and sort of the folklore that surrounds it is that it's said to be basically an omen of death, or an omen of something evil that's about to happen. And that's basically what is understood to have happened in this West Virginia case, is that it was showing up as an omen of death. Because really what happened is, for 13 months between November 1966 and December 1967 in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, which is right next to the border of Ohio, it's right next to the Ohio River, there were 200 sightings of Mothman. And these sightings, they culminated in the Silver Bridge collapse, in which 38 people died. So that's kind of the finale of this 60s Mothman story, is that there's all of these sightings that were happening in this very centralized area. It was mainly around Point Pleasant and the adjoining sort of like highways and the towns that are right outside of it. There was at least 200 sightings, and it culminated in the worst bridge collapse in United States history, in which 38 people died. And this was on the Ohio River in December of 1967. And this was 13 months after the sightings began. What happened is I-bar 13 collapsed on both sides of the bridge. There were the stoplights basically stopped working correctly, and there was red lights on both sides of the bridge. So there was a surplus of cars that were on it because neither were going. And then this I-bar collapsed. They ended up actually taking the entire bridge like out of the water and reconstructing it to figure out what happened. And it turns out that this I-bar collapsed, I-bar 13, and yeah, a lot of cars fell into the Ohio River, and 38 people died. It was at night, and it's a really sad story. But people think that Mothman's appearances were basically foreshadowing this event. So that's why the book written by John Keel is called The Mothman Prophecies. And another one of the main characters in this story is a woman named Mary Heyer, who she was a reporter in Point Pleasant, and she was kind of like John Keel's right-hand man, I guess you could say. She might have actually been the like leader of this whole event, really, because she was from Point Pleasant. She was really tied into the reports, and she actually died 13 months after the bridge collapse, and she wasn't very old. I can't remember her exact age, but I think she was in her 50s or 60s. And so there's this whole thing with the number 13 in the Mothman story, which I think that people, when that number starts coming up and these evil things are happening, people will be quick to make the connection. It's probably just a coincidence, but it's interesting to note that sort of occurrence. And some people say that they actually saw Mothman on the bridge before it happened. So I'll give you a little background about who this man John Keel was, because it's his book, The Mothman Prophecies, that really sort of brought this occurrence into the public spotlight. His book, The Mothman Prophecies, was published in 1975. He was actually an investigator that was specializing in UFOs. He was writing for Playboy at the time about the paranormal and UFOs, and that's really his forte. So a lot of actually the book is viewed through the lens of a ufologist, more so than like a cryptozoologist. He was inspired by a man named Charles Fort. And Charles Fort is basically the progenitor of Fortianism, which is the interest in the occult and supernatural and paranormal topics. So he's a Fortian. And in this book, actually, John Keel, it wasn't in this book that he coined this term, Men in Black. He coined that term, Men in Black. But Men in Black are prevalent throughout the Mothman story. So I think that most people on the surface think that the Mothman story is, that's what it is. It's about Mothman. But when you read the book, it really isn't. The story that John Keel details is much more than that. It's about UFO sightings, animal mutilations, men in black, strange phone calls, precognition, and unexplained physical ailments, just to name a few. But the majority of the book is actually about these UFO sightings. There's only one chapter that really details a lot of the Mothman sightings, and he kind of goes over the general story, and of course the bridge collapse is basically the end of the book, but really he focuses a lot on these other paranormal things that were happening in Point Pleasant during the mid-1960s. And I think that a big origin of the misunderstanding of this story kind of comes from the 2002 movie, The Mothman Prophecies, that was made about this book. And so there's a lot of differences between the movie and the book. And just to give you some background about kind of what happened in the movie, it was starring Richard Gere, and he was playing John Keel's character, but he was actually going, in the movie he's named John Klein. So they changed his name, which is kind of weird because I actually think that John Keel is a better name. In the movie, Richard Gere is playing a journalist. So, John Keel was also a journalist, but he's not a paranormal investigator. Richard Gere isn't. He's like a newspaper writer. And he lives in Chicago, which is different from John Keel was from New York City is where he lived. And in the movie, Richard Gere is married to Deborah Messing, and at the beginning, you basically see them get in a car accident, and Deborah Messing sees Mothman. She's hospitalized, and she later dies because of it. But John Keel was a bachelor. He didn't have a wife, so this is another fabrication that's put into the Mothman Prophecies movie. Also, Laura Linney plays a character named Connie Mills, who is a police officer. She's basically playing the role of Mary Heyer. And as I said, Mary Heyer was a journalist. She wasn't a police officer. And so that's another change that they made. And then Will Patton plays the character of Gordon Smallwood, who is basically a conglomeration of many characters from the book. And there's going to be spoilers for the movie and the book, the whole story I'm going to go over. So if you don't want to know, maybe watch the movie first and then listen to the podcast. But I mean, I think you'll be all right just hearing what actually happens. So the basically story was that after his wife's death, John is driving around and he basically blacks out and loses track of time, and he ends up in Point Pleasant at Gordon Smallwood's house. And that doesn't happen in the book. And he basically is repeatedly losing track of time, and he ends up there again and again until he eventually becomes friends with Officer Mills. And then Gordon is told by a voice in the sink that 99 people will die. And then later they see John and Gordon see on TV that 99 people have died in a plane crash in Denver. That also didn't happen in the book. And then later on, John gets a call from Gordon and a man named Indrid Cold. And Indrid basically knows things he shouldn't, and then Gordon says it wasn't him. This is kind of actually what happens in the book. Indrid Cold is one of these main figures. And in the movie, Indrid Cold, it seems he's basically meant to be understood as being Mothman in like another form. It's unclear who he is, but he's linked with Mothman. But in the book, Indrid Cold is actually what John Keel refers to as an entity. He's what John Keel would call an ultra-terrestrial that he was coming into contact with. And the link between him and Mothman, I mean, they're part of the same story, but you're not meant to understand that Indrid Cold is Mothman. But there are these times in the book where Indrid Cold or somebody is mimicking people on phone calls. John Keel or somebody else would get a phone call from somebody claiming to be who they weren't. Or like, for example, somebody would get a call from John Keel, and then they would confront John about it and be like, I never made that call. That wasn't me. So whatever it was having the ability to mimic voices and basically make these phone calls, which is super weird. But of course, Gordon isn't an actual character, so that really didn't happen. But there is a scene where John is on the phone with Indrid Cold in the book, and Indrid is able to know things that he's not able to know. Like, I forget exactly what was happening, but it's almost as if Indrid is there looking through John's eyes. But of course, he's not. He's on he's on the phone with him. And one of the best scenes in the movie is when John goes to Chicago to meet with basically a scholar named Alexander Leak. And basically, Leak goes through the history of moth creatures. And then when John asks how it can know all these things, Alexander basically points to the top of a building and says, imagine if we were up there, we could see a car accident coming. It doesn't mean that we're divine. It just means that we're seeing things from a different perspective. So I thought that was really poignant, but that doesn't actually happen in the book. That character doesn't exist. It was a completely fabricated scene, but it was still a great scene, I thought. Probably my favorite scene of the entire movie, really. And then later on, Gordon dies, and John hears a message saying that many will die on the Ohio River. And then John sees the bridge collapse on TV, and then he goes back to Point Pleasant. So that's not exactly how it happened either. Basically, John Keel in the book was getting these prophecies from the entities, not from Mothman. It could have been from Indrid Cold, or was often coming from another entity called Apple, who basically he thought that when the Christmas tree was lit up by the president who was the president in 1966? Nixon? Whoever was president lit up the Christmas tree. He thought that there is going to be basically a blackout on the East Coast. So that's what he was obsessed with. That's what he thought was going to happen. And he was watching the TV on December 15th, 1967, anticipating this blackout to happen. And nothing happened. But then on the scroll on the bottom of the TV, it said, "Bridge collapse. Silver Bridge collapsed in Point Pleasant, West Virginia." And I don't think it had the death toll, but that's how he learned about it. And I mean, you can imagine him watching the TV, think that one thing's going to happen, and then no, it's actually this obscure town in West Virginia that he's been at had a bridge collapse. And he doesn't detail going back to Point Pleasant because he was in New York City at that time. And that's basically the main difference there. He was getting these strange calls, like I said. He was informed that tragedies were going to happen. And he also thought that there was going to be an attack on the Pope, which that didn't end up happening. But apparently these entities actually also predicted Martin Luther King's death to him. That didn't happen in the movie, but they told him that Martin Luther King was going to be shot in the throat in Memphis on February 4th. And it actually happened on April 4th, but he was shot in the throat on Memphis. So he knew that he had this information from these entities that was going to happen. But he was also in contact with these men in black guys who, I mean, sometimes they have been likened to like shadow government or something like that. And possibly they were planning out this attack on Martin Luther King Jr. because we all know how that happened. So the book itself it's hard to follow, to be honest with you. The organization of this book is difficult to track. The chapters are basically loosely arranged on a topic, but it doesn't go chronologically. So it's hard to like get a chronological order or a timeline of this whole thing because the book just jumps around so wildly, and he'll kind of go from one thing to another. Randomly, he'll throw some kind of UFO sighting in there that doesn't really make sense. It just kind of jumps haphazardly between time, and it's not really a narrative either. It's just kind of a random assemblage of information. And so it's a really interesting read, but as you're reading through it, it's hard to make sense of why what you're reading is being presented to you when it's being presented. And like I said, the book is really more about UFOs and entities than Mothman. So I found that really interesting because when I went into reading about this, when I started reading this book, I had known about Mothman for years. I had seen the Mothman Prophecies, the movie, several times. I'd watched documentaries about Mothman, but I'd never read the book. And I really had no idea that the real story was about these UFOs and everything. So that kind of caught me by surprise. And I think that a big reason why it's so UFO heavy is because his primary interest was in the UFOs. So naturally, that's kind of the lens that he was going into it with, right? So a few of the interesting things that he talks about at the offset of this book are, for one, is this Tibetan concept of a tulpa. And he says that tulpas are things that human minds can manipulate invisible energies into visible forms. And that's what are the tulpas. So he's basically postulating that Mothman or possibly the UFOs are the result of human minds manipulating these invisible energies. And that's what I was kind of talking about earlier with that Hamlet quote, is that it wasn't exactly sure what plane these UFOs and Mothman were basically manifesting on. And he goes on to say that these tulpas are hallucinations, psychological constructs, momentary materializations of energy from the dimension beyond the reach of our senses and even beyond the reaches of our scientific instruments. And that's a direct quote from him. So this is basically the way that he's going about investigating this sort of topic. And I mean, I think it's really interesting because this is what this guy spent his career doing. And he wasn't shutting himself off from this invisible dimension, and it seemed to be kind of reaching out to him. And he makes the point that today we are no longer obsessed with direct visits from God, but instead we have constructed a mythology focused on aliens constructed in our own image. And that sort of ties back to what I was talking about of anthropomorphism, is that maybe this is like the modern mythology of gods and angels is the UFOs and the cryptid creatures. And I mean, that's kind of a point that he was making. And he uses this term ultra-terrestrials, which is, I referenced that earlier, and he defined that as beings and forces which coexist with us but are on another time frame. That is, they operate outside the limits of our space-time continuum, yet have the ability to cross over into our reality. And that's another quote from him, and it's kind of things like this that the book isn't necessarily packed with erudite observations like that, but they come through every once in a while. And I mean, that's the real crux of the book, I think, is these sort of postulations. And he goes on to say that the flying saucer or extraterrestrial visitants aren't real in the sense that a 747 airliner is real. He says that they are transmogrifications of energy under the control of some unknown extra-dimensional intelligence. And I mean, that's just fascinating to think about, to me. Some people, I think, would scoff at it, but for me, that's an entire possibility. And if you listen back to my episode about Bigfoot, and once I start talking about the quantum aspects of Bigfoot, I mean, these are things that are possible within the realm of physics that we're uncovering today. So it might sound outlandish, but that's because we're perceiving reality through such a narrow spectrum that we're totally cut off from this incredibly wide range of existence. So who are we to say that that is or isn't happening? I mean, nobody really knows is the thing. And at the start of the book, Keel goes over the history of flying creatures, which is really interesting. Between 1877 and 1880, over Coney Island in New York, there was a winged humanoid that was seen doing acrobatics over Coney Island, and that got a lot of attention. Da Vinci himself tried to build an ornithopter, which is a flying device that works by flapping wings. The Babylonians had depictions of winged lions. Angels are now depicted with wings, so a lot of people get into like some angelic theories when they're talking about Mothman. I mean, maybe they were some kind of divine intelligence, because they were able to know these things that were going to happen into the future. Mexicans have these things called Ecals, which are tiny black men who live in caves and fly around and kidnap humans. But then one of the main things that he talks about is this Indian Garuda, which is a giant bird that Vishnu and Krishna fly around on. And if you actually just look up a picture of what a Garuda is, it looks very similar to Mothman. I mean, I would suggest go onto the internet, look up a picture of the Garuda, and then look up the statue of Mothman, and you'll see that they're very similar. I think that the main difference is usually Mothman is depicted as sort of flying upright, whereas the Garuda is usually shown as flying head first, but you can definitely see the similarities. And John Keel calls the Mothman thing, he calls it the year of the Garuda. So again, there's this, I mean, obviously the Garuda is some kind of divine being because it's linked to Vishnu and Krishna. And I mean, with all of the precognition and foresight and telepathy that was going on, it's, you can see how he would make some kind of leap to a creature of that sort. He also talks about Native Americans and their Thunderbird. He details the Piasa of the Dakota natives, which have a red eye and a long tail. They're a flying, giant flying creature. And then Keel also makes a note that West Virginia was uninhabited, thousands of years ago, while neighboring Ohio was home to the Mound Builders. So something is rotten in West Virginia, to go back to the Hamlet thing. You know, I mean, there's something weird about that place for sure. And I think that, you know, probably a lot of West Virginians that have had experiences like this will tell you that the place is a little bit different. So to go into some of the sightings of Mothman itself that Keel details, in November 15th, 1966, at 11:30 p.m., two couples, the Scarberries and the Mallets, were driving home from the TNT area, which became the Mothman epicenter. During World War II, this area that is known as the TNT area was used for manufacturing ammunition, and it basically became the epicenter of the Mothman phenomenon. And they saw Mothman, and they described it as being shaped like a man with big wings. They said it was 6.5 or 7 feet tall, but that it was difficult to tell. They said it had hypnotic red eyes and that it followed them around the city limits. And then shortly after this happened, Sheriff George Johnson of Point Pleasant called a press conference to talk about it. And a reporter then coined the term Mothman, which he basically was drawing upon a similarity to the Batman comic character that was very popular at the time. So Mothman actually has its name being rooted in Batman. And then later on, the Scarberries, apparently they're plagued by strange sounds late at night. And they weren't sure what it was, but I think they ended up actually abandoning the, I think they were living in a trailer park home and they moved from that area. So Mary Heyer herself, the famed reporter of the story, her niece, Connie Carpenter, reportedly saw Mothman, and she came down with what was called Klieg conjunctivitis, which basically is noted by red eyes, swollen red eyes. Apparently she was very harmed by light after she saw this. So this is one of the instances of a sighting of Mothman being linked to some kind of physical ailment, which was happening a lot. And then people began to gather around the TNT area, and one woman named Marcella Bennett witnessed the creature by the TNT area. A music teacher saw Mothman hovering at the treetops. A 17-year-old saw a huge bird that followed him for a mile. Two 18-year-old firemen said that they saw what was definitely a bird, but it was huge. Five teenagers saw a man-sized bird, a man-sized bird-like creature by a rock quarry that ran into the woods. And then a man named Thomas Urey saw a gray figure standing in the road. It then sprouted wings and flew off. And apparently there was more than 100 adults that sighted this creature within that year, that November to December in the mid-60s. And, I mean, those are just some of the main, like, sightings that Keel details in the book. And like I said, there's only really one main chapter that was dedicated to detailing these sightings, which is kind of weird. The rest really are about UFOs and sort of his travels around the area. And then Keel, he went to the TNT area to look around. And this is actually a scene that's in the movie, but it happened in real life. He went with two people named Connie and Keith. And Connie said that she saw red eyes while they were in the TNT area. Keel didn't see it. He went back to look for it. Couldn't see anything. But Connie's ear actually started bleeding after this. So another physical ailment. But I mean, really, those are the main sightings of Mothman that were detailed. The rest is a lot of UFO sightings, and honestly, that might be the more interesting part of the story. So, in March 1966, a woman named Mrs. Kelly saw a UFO appear over a school where her kids went. Basically, a door opened in this UFO, and there was a man that came out of the door and was standing midair outside. And this is pretty graphically detailed in the book. And I mean, that's just incredible. You know, imagine you see a UFO over where your kids are going, and then a man steps out of it. I mean, that's pretty terrifying. Mary Heyer herself, she saw a perfectly round object in the sky, which is interesting. And then in November of 1966, an elderly man went to Mary Heyer and said that another man had approached his car after he got out from an elongated object that flew down from the sky. He approached him and they had a brief conversation, and the man went back into the craft, which flew off into the sky. And weeks later, a scientist actually visited him and told him to forget the event. So usually it's these men in black that are telling people to forget about the stuff. And in this case, it was a scientist. So that's kind of confusing. But it should be noted that the men in black in this case are very different from the men in black from the Hollywood movies. In the Hollywood movies, they're basically, they're the protagonists. Like, they're the good guys. They're depicted as just being like, you know, kind of normal type people that are looking out for people's best interests and are hunting aliens and trying to get rid of their presence, essentially. But in Kiel's details, the men in black are not good guys. They're not good people. And they're not even really described as being human. I mean, sort of the implication that he makes is that they're probably not human. Every time he describes them, he focuses on the sort of different nature of how they look. And maybe this is a result of sort of 1970s xenophobia or something like that, possibly, because oftentimes they're depicted as being Oriental, and that their faces just look weird and that their voices are weird. But basically, the implication that he's making is that there's something off about them. They're described as wearing black suits, hence the name Men in Black. And he says that basically at times the town was basically infested with them. And, I mean, they're not painted in a good picture. They're basically depicted as being aggressive and forceful, intimidating, and basically, he says that they ask weird questions. Kiel says that he saw one of them and that this man in black was wearing a Sigma sign on a badge. And the Sigma sign is basically like, it looks like a K, but it basically depicts the stranger unknown is what the Sigma sign comes to mean. So it's interesting that he said that he saw men in black wearing this badge. And you know, it's just the men in black in this case, it's hard to say exactly what they are. They're probably government agents, but the way that Kiel describes them makes them seem like maybe they are something else, but it's hard to tell. And then there's another character named Woody Derenberger, who I think that Woody Derenberger was the main prototype for the Gordon Smallwood character. And because he had a lot of these weird events, but basically Woody was driving home and a black blob flew past him and stopped right in front of his car. A man then got out and telepathically told Derenberger to open his window, and he told him that his name was Mr. Cold. So this is where the injured cold story sort of like originates. And in the movie, Gordon Smallwood is in contact with Injured Cold, so this is probably the main reason why I think there's a link between them. But he told him his name, and then Indrid Cold told him to tell the police about this, which he did. And then Indrid Cold went into his chimney-shaped UFO, which ascended into the sky. Later on, though, Woody started having telepathic transmissions from Indrid Cold. And Cold said that he was from a planet called Lanulos in the galaxy of Ganymede, is apparently what Woody was told. And Mr. Keel says that Woody was, you know, basically a pretty normal person. He didn't have any psychic sort of experiences before this, but he had this experience and he started getting these transmissions, which is very weird. And apparently this experience occurred at a crossroads. So, of course, crossroads and folklore and sort of magical belief systems are a liminal space where energies are basically able to manifest themselves. And Keel says that this whole thing might actually be tied into the ancient ley lines, which basically are grids of energy that are said to cover the earth, and that maybe these orbs that were being seen in these lights and these UFOs and even Mothman were tied into the ancient ley lines. And there's a group of kids that saw blue orbs, which if you've listened to my Bigfoot episode, you know that I've seen these blue orbs also. And I mean, these just pop up all the time. And the kids that saw these blue orbs became severely sunburned, which is another instance of these physical ailments popping up. And it was also said that there was a UFO sighting right above the Silver Bridge. So the UFO and Mothman were both seen above the Silver Bridge. Keel's main experience in this sort of story is that he saw a glowing disc, and he also saw a mysterious red light, which he details. So he didn't see Mothman himself, but he did see some UFOs during this trip. So I think more credence could have been lent to this book if he would have seen it himself, but he was a reporter. He was basically just reporting on the things that were happening, but he did see UFOs. And throughout this time, through the Ohio Valley, dogs, cows, and horses were dying mysteriously. And that's another thing that's being linked to UFOs in the modern day. This is still going on, is basically these cattle or animal mutilations that are supposedly linked to UFOs because of the laser-like precision that is being done in these executions, basically. And that's the same thing. That's how it's detailed in Mothman prophecies. It said that there is no blood in these animals when they are found, which is perplexing. I'm still not sure what to make of the whole cattle and animal mutilation scenario, but when there's these laser-like incisions and no blood, I'm not saying it's aliens, but I mean, it's perplexing to say the very least. And a lot of the story is actually Keel's experiences with these entities, as I said. So there is one entity named Apple that he was constantly in contact with. Usually it was over phone calls. I don't think he was getting telepathic transmissions, but he was getting these phone calls from these entities. And Apple predicted a plane crash, which, I mean, that happened in the movie also, but it wasn't the Denver plane crash, so that was a fabrication. And another point I also want to make is that, I should have said this earlier, but when you're doing literary criticism and you've got a source text and you're looking at the differences that were made from a source text to the adaptation of it. So in this case, it would be the Mothman Prophecies book to the movie. If there's a change that's made, you have to look at it and say, okay, what effect was this having? Like, why was this choice made by the writer? And that's often with going back to Shakespeare, that's a really good thing to do because, I mean, Shakespeare had these sources for his plays and he would make these changes and in that case, you would be able to look at it and say, okay, what was the effect of this? And oftentimes that was some kind of deep literary sort of purpose I was using. But I think from the book to the movie, taking the Men in Black out, taking the entities largely out of it, changing the course of events, giving him a wife, that was basically for just storytelling and for the movie itself. So, but that's one thing to keep in mind. When you have a source text and then something that draws upon it, you got to look at what the changes were made and what the effect of it was. And so John, basically, when he would be contacting these entities, he would think of a question and a call would come to him with the answer, which is just crazy. And he says that at one point of time, there was messages waiting for him at a hotel that he didn't know he was going to stay at. He made the decision just out of the blue kind of to stay at this hotel because he had to for one reason or another. And the lady at the front desk was like, okay, John, we have these messages waiting for you here. And he's like, no, that's impossible. I literally didn't know I was going to be staying here until just minutes ago. No, there couldn't be any messages waiting for me. But there they were. And so, like I said, they successfully predicted MLK's death, but they missed it by a couple of months. But the entities did tell John about an impending disaster on the Ohio River. So he was aware that something was going to be happening, but for one reason or another, he was sort of very, very interested in this EMF blackout that was going to happen to coincide with the lighting of the Christmas tree. But basically, the culmination of this entire story is the disaster that happened on the Ohio River. Mary Heyer was having dreams about Christmas packages in the river. And I think the book actually details Mary Heyer and one other person having these dreams about Christmas packages on the river. And they have that in the movie as well. And I think that that's one of the more artful scenes, I would say. And of course, this bridge collapse that happened on December 15th of 1967. So it was very close to Christmas. People were doing their Christmas shopping when it happened. And so, I mean, that's another one of these precognition things that was happening in the story that it's hard to make sense of. But that's what was going on. And, yeah, like I said, John Keel was watching the TV back in New York City. He was watching the Christmas tree light up, waiting for it to happen. And nothing ended up happening, but then he read a scroll on the bottom that said there had been this bridge collapse in Point Pleasant. Silver Bridge collapsed. 38 people ended up losing their lives, and I mean, it's really just a travesty and a tragedy, really. And it's the worst bridge collapse in United States history, and people think that Mothman was basically an omen that was sort of signaling that was going to happen. And of course, for it to be an omen, it would have some kind of future knowledge, which points to it maybe being some kind of ultra-terrestrial, as John Keel would say. It's hard to make sense of what it is. People are still having experiences with Mothman. People are still seeing this creature, supposedly, but this was the real, you know, the real crux of the events was back in the 60s. And, you know, I would say watch the movie, read the book if you'd like to. There's plenty of good documentaries about Mothman. There's a Mothman festival in Point Pleasant. There's a museum that you can go to. So, I mean, Mothman is the thing in Point Pleasant. Today, that's the main thing that's linked to that town. And so the tradition of Mothman is still alive. Apparently, it's still out there. Nobody, of course, knows what it is. But, I mean, this story with John Keel and the Mothman prophecies is just a fascinating one. All right, well, that's it for today's show. And thank you for listening. Also, I'll tell you, you can follow me on social media. My Instagram page is Archaic Futurism. And you can follow me on Twitter at USU Folklore. So thanks for stopping by, and I'll see you next week.